What's up, everybody? We are the Let's Talk Divots podcast. I'm your co-host, Casey Johnson, joined by Captain Ron Dunn, and we are your women's professional golf podcast. We've got players, caddies, representatives coming at you to give you all the tour inside information on all social media platforms. You can find us at Let's Talk Divots. Go ahead, send us a message, give us a share, like us. Tweet us, follow us, comment us. We really, really appreciate the support. It just helps us jump up the ratings. So I'm going to go ahead and say, what's up, Ronnie?
All good there, Looper. We're doing good here in California, still in our COVID hibernation period here. But it's all good. I'm excited about our upcoming guest because she's a local girl here in San Diego. So I'm just really looking forward to talking to Tiff Joe.
What a great conversation that was. Just to recap for the listeners before we go into the audio, easily one of the funniest players on tour, people in general. Sorry for all the laughter. I'll try to edit that out the best that I can. But no, we were just in stitches here. We talked about surf. We talked about life. We talked about her podcast, guitar, 10 years on tour, all the friends she's got out there, the onesies she wears, that her being an advocate for the girls golf LPGA tour, just so much great information and just a fantastic conversation. Ronnie, why don't you go ahead and introduce our guest?
Sure, I'd love to. Like I said, local girl here, Tiff Joe. She was born December 8th, 1986 in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, raised by both her parents who were from, wait for it, South Korea. That's right, the most dominant country right now on tour in the LPGA. But she moved to San Diego when she was young. She went to Rancho Bernardo High School, where she excelled at golf there, and later went on to play for the University of California at Los Angeles. 8 clap for all you UCLA Bruins out there. She finished school with a 3.0. So this girl's not only got game, but she's got brains, and we hope to bring you some inside look at Tiff Joe, get some questions answered that you might not have even thought about. But it was a great interview. Casey brought it. Tiff brought it. We hope you can enjoy it. Sit back, listen to it, give us a like.
Captain Ron, what's going on, brother?
Hey, excited. We got a local San Diego girl on today. I'm very jacked for this one.
Local legend, some might say, the Tiffany Joe. Sorry, I didn't mean to call you Tiffany. I'm not mad at you. Tiff Joe, Tiff Joe. What's up, Tiff?
I'm good. I felt like I was getting called to the principal's office there for a second.
I don't know what happened. I've never even called you that before. It's like, yeah, my brother's name is Christopher. And like, I call him that when like, you know, I want the attention, just like that whole elongate name. So I promise to never do that again. What's going on?
Nothing much. Just hanging out. I've officially like watched through the entire catalog on Netflix. So I have like nothing left to watch.
It's actually like a really good thing, this COVID, in like the tiniest way, because we're able to get a few of you tour women on our podcast. So we're super stoked that you've gone through all the Netflix shows. So
yeah, it's funny whenever like Girls Golf or something reaches out for us to do something, I'm always like, well, they know I'm not busy, so obviously I have to do it. So yeah, whenever I'm reaching out to other girls on tour for projects, I'm like, I know you guys aren't doing anything right now, so no excuses.
Well, we are knee deep in this project and we are so stoked about it. And it is a golf podcast, but all I want to talk about is surfing. So let's dive right into surfing. You're a well-documented surfer. The waters have been closed for how long, a month or something?
Yeah, so I think the last time I paddled out was about 6 weeks ago.
About the same time for me, I paddled out. For those who don't know, I mean, anybody who's listening and knows me, I'm a junkie surfer. Tiff's a junkie surfer. We've actually been liking each other's surf pictures on Instagram for like 5 or 6 years now. So that's been super cool. It's super cool when I actually finally got to meet Tiff. And so the surf's been closed for about 6 weeks, and you have not been in the water yet?
I have not. I'm still kind of waiting, just because, I mean, yeah, it's technically open to go surfing, but, you know, you give surfers an inch and they take a mile. So I'm kind of waiting for other beaches to start opening up to kind of thin the crowd of the few beaches that are open right now. And then also I'm waiting for the bioluminescence bloom to die down a little bit as well.
Sorry, you and Ron were just talking about that before we actually press record. Can we like repeat a little bit for the listeners not in California and talk about the luminescence, what that is, and please go ahead.
Yeah, you want to explain it, Ron?
Well, it's the red tide is here. It usually comes right about the same time every year, and it comes down, and it's during the day it's real brown and mucky looking water, hence the name red tide. But then at night, the bioluminescence, when any agitation happens on the water, the waves crash in the soup, the whitewash turns a light blue, almost iridescent, fluorescent color out there. I was out there last night till about 11:30 at night, and I need extra hands to count how many people are out there on the bluff here in Solana Beach watching it go off. It is pretty exciting to watch, but you don't want to swim in there. It's not real healthy with all the, and the algae does float. I saw in Carlsbad, there was all kinds here in Encinitas, not so much. Now in Solana Beach, there is. So it's working its way north to south.
Yeah, I've heard that it does have a little bit of toxicity. So like I've heard of a lot of friends paddling out in the algae bloom and getting like skin irritations or getting kind of sick. So yeah, I've always kind of thought it's better to be safe than sorry. So I won't paddle out in it.
It's nice to watch from the shore in the evening hours. But yeah, there were a couple surfers out there last night, actually 10:30 at night, they paddled out. Watching them catch a wave, you could see them paddle the blue, blue, blue. Then you get up and it was kind of neat watching that. But better them than you guys. I don't surf anymore. I had near drowning experience years ago, and I respect the ocean way too much. Yet I've grown up living within stone's throw of the beach my whole life. But it's a lifestyle, not a sport. It's a wonderful, wonderful, you know, lifestyle to get into.
Yeah, I have just talk with the Red Shell podcast, but I think you can't eat shellfish as well. I'm no marine biologist or anything, but I think with that toxicity, it gets into the fish. So when the shellfish and the red tides there, that's just something I hear. Don't Wikipedia me that or anything. All right, but so what are you missing more right now? You've got 6 weeks without golf and 6 weeks without surf. What do you want more?
Oh, 100% surfing. It's not even a contest.
I told you she was sick. I told you.
I think mentally, because, you know, the LPGA has been telling us, like, once the season starts, it's going to be, like, a long haul. Like, we'll probably be playing through Christmas or whatever. And so I think mentally preparing for that, I'm like, we're going to get plenty of golf. But, I mean, during that time, I'm not really going to get any surfing either. So this is definitely the longest time I've been home and have been not in the ocean. So that's been a little bit tough.
Are there any other ladies on tour that paddle out with you? Any other surfers? Any South Africans or anything? Australians?
No, I mean, like, I've taken a couple girls out. Like, I've taken Jane Park and Christina Kim in Hawaii. She's not happy with me. like Gemma Dryberg. Ryan O'Toole is actually used to grow up. She grew up in San Clemente, and she was like a sponsored surfer and skater when she was little before she played golf. So I would say like she's probably the best surfer on tour. But yeah, other than us two, I don't really know any who are just head over heels like we are.
What break do you like here locally?
It's funny. So I like, for me, I'm not very good. So it's more important for me to like rather than the quality of the wave, it's like lack of crowds and like lack of stairs and not having to parallel park. That's how I gauge how important the break, how good a break is to me. So for me, I like just going to La Jolla Shores because there's like plenty of parking. It's like a beach break. You can spread out. You don't have to like compete with other people for waves. And so I would say like La Jolla Shores and like San Onofre are like really fun breaks for me.
You like a longboard, right?
Yeah, I like a lot of volume. I don't like paddling.
I just want to say for the listeners that, you know, I'm not going to say bullshit. I'm going to say it's baloney that she is no good and doesn't know how to surf. If you follow her Instagram at any point in time, she's got some story up there and she's like shredding it. She's hanging 10 off the nose, doing all sorts of tricks up there. And, you know, longboard or not, volume or not, she can surf and she is very, very comparable at that.
I'll tell you what, my new favorite hobby right now is like practicing cross-stepping on my foam roller. And I've definitely eaten it quite a few times, but it's actually been a really great way to get some muscle memory with like, you know, cross-stepping and like cross-stepping, you know, like goofy footed and like learning to like hang heels and stuff. It's actually been really good practice, but I would just warn people at home, if they're going to try it, make sure you have like a yoga mat or some carpet down there. Don't do it on hardwood floors because you'll eat it real fast.
I've seen you practicing that drill on your news feed there on Instagram, and I'm like, yeah, that would go over pretty well. But so like, what is your surf story? How did you get into that as an adult, right?
Yeah. So, and I have like a newfound respect for people that pick up golf pretty late in life, just because, I mean, kids are jerks. They just pick things up so fast. And when you grow up like in the ocean or you grow up on a golf course, it's obviously a lot easier to get better at quickly. But as an adult, when you're like in your 20s or your 30s, I feel like it's a lot more difficult and it comes a lot slower. But actually, I started surfing the off season right after my second year on tour, and I had actually just lost my tour card. And so in the 2 months between the last tournament and going back to Q school, I was just like so tired and exhausted and fed up with golf that I kind of booked one of those, like, you know, the eat, pray, love, find yourself surf yoga retreats in Nicaragua. And so I ended up going down to Nicaragua and doing this surf retreat and just fell in love with it. And I had actually never tried surfing before that point in time, even though I lived like 40 minutes away from the beach as like when I was growing up. But yeah, I came back and like went straight to Costco and got my like $100 Wavestorm surfboard and started going out pretty consistently. But like in retrospect, I look back and I think, yeah, at the time, like losing my card seemed like it was the end of the world and it seemed like such a bad thing. But in retrospect, I look back and think if I hadn't lost my card that year, and I ended up getting it back at Q school like 2 months after that, but if I hadn't lost my card that year, then I never would have discovered my passion for surfing. So I definitely look back on that time whenever I'm like struggling with anything, because like even out of really bad circumstances, like great things can come out of it.
Oh, no question. I mean, it's actually absolutely consumed my last like half of a decade, 5 or 6 years or so. And what about the similarities between golf and surf? Like, is there anything that you can kind of cross over there? Do you think like I think there's quite a few from especially like a mental standpoint. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. I think there's so many similarities in golf and surfing. And I think that's why you see so many surfers who like to hit up the golf course whenever, you know, they have a lay day or something. I think first of all, they're both like both social and like introspective. I mean, you could go out and play, you know, 9 holes by yourself, super twilight, and have a great time. Or you could, you know, crack open a 6-pack with your 3 of your buddies and go out and play 18 on the weekend. And it's the same thing with surfing. There are some days that I just go out there for the solitude. I go out there just to paddle out and like be alone by myself. And then there are sometimes that I go to the parking lot at La Jolla Shores and never make it into the water. I just sit there with all like the 80 and over senior citizen crowd with like my mug of coffee and just sit on the beach and just hang out with them. And like I love both aspects, but I think that's like one of the things that draws me to golf and surfing is that, you know, you can have both. And then also I think a lot of it, like golf and surfing are actually both super technical. There's like a lot of technique and like fundamentals. And then at the same time, like when you are out there, like you can work on your technique, but when you're out there and you're on a wave, like that all just goes out the window, right? Like you just kind of like do whatever like is kind of comes naturally to you. And I think that's why it's also like so hard to break bad habits in both of them. Like, you know, you could work on your technique on the range and then you go and play in a tournament and you're like, ah, you just can't really think about that stuff anymore. And it's the same thing with surfing. Like if you have a bad habit in your pop-up or something, you can work on it and you could work on your pop-ups on land or whatever, but once you go out there and you're like under the gun, like all that kind of goes out the window.
Well, yeah, you're taught the difference to one of the big differences, which is between golf and surf, is like golf, you can actually like work on your swing. You can be kind of technical. You can sit there where, you know, on the wave, your time on wave is actually like minuscule, right? So like in order to like, it, like you said, you got to work on that pop up on shore, or like, you know, you're working on your technique on your foam roller, you're saying like that, where golf, you can just be like another golf ball, another golf ball, another golf ball, you know?
It's funny you say that, because a while ago, Christina Kim came to visit me. She was like doing she was visiting like Callaway or something. And we went over and played Torrey Pines. And after we finished, I said like, do you mind if I just catch a couple waves at La Jolla Shores before we go to brunch? And she's like, yeah, sure. I'll just sit there and watch. And so she watched me surf for like 30 minutes and I caught like maybe one or two waves. And I got out and she was like, you know, Tiff, you love surfing. You invest so much time, money, and like energy in it. I don't understand why you're not better. I was like, imagine if your friend wanted to learn how to hit a golf ball. And so you took them to the range, but every time they wanted to hit one, they had to like sprint from 40 yards away, beat six other people. And then even then the ball might move. Like think of how long it would take to learn how to properly hit a golf ball. Like that's what surfing is. And she's like, okay, that's fair enough. And like, you know, last year when we played in Hawaii, I took her out to Waikiki to catch a couple waves. And she's like, all right, I get it. It's hard.
I know what you've invested in it to get to where you are. And like, whenever people are like, oh yeah, I want to learn surfing. I'm like, yeah. I think, you know, just so you know, you probably have to show up somewhere and put like a month straight in, like going every day. Otherwise, you know, that one week doesn't quite justify. But well, I guess one of the things I think that is so similar between golf and surf is like, it's on the wave, you have to be 100% present. Like you said, like you don't, once you are up on the wave, and I think it's like a great escape, you don't have that option anymore to like think about where your footwork is going to be. It's just like all of a sudden reacting. And like when you're in the zone on the golf course, you're out there and you're in the moment, you got a bunch of birdies on the go. And maybe every golfer doesn't, you know what I'm talking about, but you know, like just, do you think that's kind of coincides some similarities there of just like being out of your mind when you're like on the golf course and in the zone, and then when you're on the waves surfing?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for me, that's actually something that surfing's taught me more of that I've been able to bring to golf. So I think with golf, you just have so much time to like sit there and think about what you're doing. But definitely once I started surfing, I mean, when you're dropping into a wave, you have no choice but to stay present. Like you just like, it just is almost like an animal instinct when you're dropping in. And so for me, that was something that surfing taught me a lot of, and I was able to like bring to golf, and like just that ability to be a little bit more like athletic with it instead of being super analytical.
Yeah, there's a book out there. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's actually bases a lot. It's called Stealing Fire. And it actually gets into a little bit more esoteric stuff, but it's kind of, it talks about, you know, just that whole, why people like to play extreme sports, you know, like hang off the side of mountains, skydive, golf, race car, surfing, whatever, is because like, it's actually the only time that you're like out of your mind is like when you can react and not necessarily think. So.
Yeah, 100%. I agree.
Okay, so this is a golf podcast, right?
Oh, is it?
could be.
Like I said, I was like, man, I just want to talk about surf the whole time. But let's jump into a little bit of golf. I'm laughing hysterically. You guys got a podcast, an amateur podcast, as you call it. Like, let's give a little shout out to Two Girls One Putt. Is that right?
Yeah, and I don't know how like. I don't even know if I want to call it like an amateur one. The problem with me is, and this is why I need caddies that are really type A and anal, it's because I have zero follow through. So I think we filmed like two episodes in 2 days, and then we haven't done anything since. It's been like a month or something. But originally the plan was, have you watched Zach Galifianakis's Between Two Ferns?
Yes.
He just brings in actors and, you know, talent, and he just roasts them, and he's super mean. And the whole premise was that that's what we wanted to do with LPGA players. We wanted to just like bring on players and just be incredibly rude and just kind of semi borderline bully them the whole time. But after we got through Marina, we realized we can't really do that to very many other people without them getting kind of upset with us. So we're kind of like, yeah, so if anyone's listening to this and they want to come on and be roasted for 20 minutes, let us know, send us a direct message. But yeah, that was kind of the origin of what we wanted to do. But yeah, we haven't really had too much luck following through.
You can only roast your personal friends, hey?
Yeah, because I think I've always told people that cyberbullying and roasting people is kind of like the secret sixth love language for us. Like that's how you know we really like you, is if we're like making fun of you and being kind of mean to you. So yeah, after we got through Marina, we're like, I think Jane was like, we should have Julie Inkster. And I was like, no, I don't feel comfortable doing that. She's like, or Mike Wan. And I was like, I don't feel comfortable roasting him for 20 minutes either. So yeah, we're still kind of trying to get that magical guest that's going to be okay with us being mean to him for 20 minutes.
I hope I get roasted by Tiff Joe one day, but well, you say you don't have the personality to push through with stuff. So this just brings me to your caddy, as you brought up caddying, Beeham, who I roomed with in Australia, and I made the mistake of calling her Brittany, and don't do that.
Oh.
Yeah, that's like calling Tiff Tiffany, all right? But yeah, she told me that you she does all the numbers. I want to know, as a caddy who hasn't had a player that is reliant on me for all the numbers, they always seem to coincide and both do them themselves. That is some serious trust. What kind of trust do you have to have with your caddy in order to do that?
Well, I think for me, I have to really, really like who I'm working with. For me, if I don't like them as a person, then I won't trust them as much. And I don't know if that's like a great way to do things, but like they say, don't mix like business and personal. But for me, like, a caddy player relationship is like business and personal. And Beeham for me is like not only like my, caddy, but also like kind of my sports psychologist, and like she keeps an eye on what my swing is doing. And so it's really easy for me. Even like the first tournament we worked together this year, I was like, I just do everything and just do everything. Tell me what the number is and then we'll figure out the club together. I'm not someone who's gonna just take whatever my caddy is saying and like do exactly what it is. I'll definitely push back a little bit, but for me, my rule is like, if we disagree on a club or a read or a particular shot, it's almost like they have to be like a lawyer pleading their case. Like, this is why I think this is like a 7-iron, because like the wind is actually coming more off of the right and like not, like straight downwind and all these things. And if I listen to it and I'm like, no, I still think it's the 8, then I'll just, that's on me, right? But if I listen to him and I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Like, it doesn't come, I'm not like blindly following what someone says, but yeah, for sure. Like, I do have a great deal of trust in there.
What about when it comes down to putting? Do you read your putts or do you ask for a little input?
The same thing where I'll pretty much read all my putts, but if I'm not sure, I'll ask her. And then it's kind of the same thing. Like, if I struggle to read grain. And so if the greens are really grainy that week, I tend to rely on her more. But for sure, it's the same thing. It's like, if we kind of really grossly disagree on a break, then like, I kind of ask her why she thinks it is. And if she gives me good enough reasons, then I kind of like look at, the evidence, and then I make my decision from there. But I mean, 100%, it like, if it's the wrong read, then it's like, it's fooled both of us. So I'm never in that position where I like miss a putt and turn around and like do the angry teacup. You should never be in that position, because the final decision is always yours, because you're the one pulling the trigger.
100%. You're the one hitting the shots, and we've had this conversation with multiple women on this cast for sure. But a super shout out to Beeham. She is awesome, and you're lucky to have her on the bag for sure. And what an amazing amount of trust. I don't know if I can handle that pressure. I want my player walking those yards too. Tiff, talk to us about the onesie, please. Your Instagram is great, and we're gonna go all over your social media handles by the time this podcast is over. But if you don't follow Tiff Joe, you gotta follow her. She is absolutely hysterical. The onesie, we want the story. Please tell us.
Well, for the record, I was into the animal onesies before they became like a weird obsession. I think I like used to must have worked. Oh yeah, I think it was maybe 8 years ago. I was like getting really into the whole CrossFit thing, and there was a group of guys at my gym, and we kind of called them the frat boys because they were constantly like partying super heavily. And one of their favorite things to do was to like each dress up in a different animal onesie and like hit up the bar and just like hang out at the bar. And it was like. That I'm realizing is that when you're in like a group of people, it's funny, but when you're by yourself in a unicorn onesie, like eating at the Quiznos, like people get disturbed. There's just like moms hold their children closer. Like, don't look at that strange lady. But yeah, so I actually ended up like going on Amazon and I bought this really cool unicorn onesie thinking like, oh yeah, the next time they go on a pub crawl, they're going to invite me and I'm going to get to hang out with them. And like the instant I bought mine, it instantly lost its cool factor and they stopped doing it. But I think from there, I just like, they're really comfy, you know, and I just started wearing them pretty habitually. And now I'm that weirdo.
How many do you own?
How many is like socially acceptable for us?
Hey, not many people are listening to this podcast yet anyway, so just be honest.
I mean, it's probably like 16 is okay, right? That's fine, right?
I was gonna say the over under is 20. You know, if you're over 20, that's kind of the number for sure.
Yeah, if you have 21 onesies, you're a weirdo. But like 16, 17 is fine.
So obviously an amazing sense of humor on tour. You seem to attract, like you've been out there 8 or 9 years now, Tiff, is that right?
Yeah, this is my 10th year on tour. Oof.
And so like that sense of humor, where does it come from growing up in the Korean, American background? Like what's going on here? Is your dad the funniest guy ever or what?
I'm not really sure. Like I've always appreciated a good pun. Sloppy Joe, my email address is like from like 6th or 7th grade, and I thought it was really clever at the time. But it's really not until like the last 3 or 4 years where puns started being funny again. I think when I was in middle school and every time I would drop a pun, it's like, oh my gosh, you're such a dork, like you're such a weirdo. But now like people are starting to appreciate them a little bit more. So yeah, I don't really know. I wouldn't say my parents are particularly funny people. I mean, neither am I 90% of the time. I just kind of like put a lot out there and just hope that something sticks and someone laughs at something.
Maybe not so. Go ahead, Ronnie, please.
I was just saying you're very positive. You're one of the most super positive person I've ever, and that comes having a good sense of humor. You laugh at a lot of things. You put stuff behind you. I just love your attitude in everything, surfing, golf, just in life in general. It's just a great attitude to have.
I think when you play golf for a living too, you almost kind of have to, you either have to have a sense of humor or you have to be a little bit a sociopath to be able to disassociate
for
yourself.
For sure.
Like the game is just so mercurial and you could do everything right for 10 years and still not have like very much success. So I think like humor in golf is just like kind of a way to stay sane for me.
Most of the time for most people it's going terribly wrong on the golf course anyway, so if you can't keep that attitude out there, and even on obviously on tour, I mean, the women hit some bad shots out there and you get frustrated, so I think you have that winning attitude out there. And anytime I see Tiff Joe coming from the putting green or the range, I'm always like, okay, you know, she's always got a smile on her face and she's always chatting to somebody, so like what's going on there? It always grabs my attention. Have you had the pun, the Girona virus, yet?
No, I haven't. But man, I should.
Yes!
Man, I'm really blowing it with that pun.
Maybe not socially acceptable in today's political climate, but you know, I don't know. I feel like I might have read that somewhere on your Instagram, but okay, I'm taking full credit. I made it up. What about the Girona virus? Do you think we're going to get, you think we're going back on tour anytime soon? Talk to the people, the listeners.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like they're shooting for like a June start. I don't know like how that like realistic that is yet, but I think it's kind of like up till this point, they've been kind of doing it on a day by day basis, just based on like what's going on in the US at that point. But I mean, like talking to other girls, there's a lot of stuff that I hadn't even thought about, like, you know, having everyone tested, like players and caddies when it comes time to play, like spectators, no spectators, like just like there's so many things up in the air that, I mean, they tell us June. So I'm like, all right, I guess like at some point in June, I should probably start practicing. As far as like a concrete time, like I'm like completely in the dark, and honestly I'm always the last person to find out about anything anyway, so I mean, coronavirus or not. So
have you had a chance to hit any balls here in San Diego? Everything's pretty much closed down, but you had a chance to do anything with your golf game?
So Vista Valley, where I practice, has actually been open this whole time. I haven't really been going up there to practice just because, I mean, for me, like, if we're starting in June, if that's like the earliest time we're going to start, like, I don't really consider golf practice that essential right now. So I'd rather not risk it. But like, there, I want to say maybe like 3 or 4 days ago, I went out at like 6:30 PM and I just kind of did a drive by and saw that there were like no cars in the parking lot. No one was out on the course. So I went out and played like 3 or 4 holes. It did not go well. But yeah, like, I mean, if I really wanted to practice, like the opportunity is there, but I mean, it's the same thing with surfing, even though the beaches are open, I'm just kind of choosing not to do it quite yet.
Yeah, no, on tour, I don't see you as a grinder. You're not out there every time after the round going to the range. You kind of come and go as you need. And I agree, it's a more of a mental game. You either got it or you don't. When you get out there and just kind of roll the dice and get out there, hit the ball, chase it, and keep going.
Yeah, and I would say that's probably Beham's biggest struggle is being like, yeah, Tiff, maybe we should like work on some of those ridges. Because I'm like, I'm good. Let's go. We've been here long enough. And she's like, we've played like 4 holes.
Well, I'm going to probe you just a bit more on this topic, just because actually as a caddy, I'm curious, maybe the players are a little bit more privy to some knowledge, but like, so will the players for the most part, like if Mike Wan decides to go ahead in June, will you take that? Do you think players will take that at face value in like being like, okay, you know, we trust the commissioner, we're good to go. They're going to put the protocols in place. Or do you think we'll actually lose some players being like, I'm still not comfortable to be out there?
Yeah, I think for the most part, like all of us pretty much trust the commissioner's like decision whether we start in June or not. I think the biggest problem might be that a lot of our players and some of our caddies are international. And so as far as travel bans go, and you know, if borders are open or not, like I would assume that like if we start in June, people have to get here, have to know at least a month in advance so that they could get here, potentially quarantine themselves for 14 days before the season starts. So yeah, I think more than, you know, the commissioner's like more than like trusting him or not trusting him, it's more like we're just kind of thinking about how it's going to all work out. But I mean, if the commissioner says like, we're good to go, we're going to keep you guys safe, like we all trust him.
Sure, we've you know, talked about Mike Wan on this show already, and he seems to have everybody's interest, the best interest. And I've already talked about my man crush on him, so we don't need to go there again. But it seems like he's doing an awesome job. Our border, we're going to move. Our border is closed for Canadians until the end of May. So there we go. And my player is actually trapped here as well. So, And correct me if I'm wrong, have you been working on a swing change, you know, in the last year?
Yeah, I mean, it's really like a swing change that I've really been working on for like the last 20 years, but I've been like really trying to get a handle on the last year. It's just like, and it's pretty typical. And like the club tends to get really behind me. And so I've always kind of had this move where like the club gets kind of like laid off in transition. And so for the longest time, I was like just trying to work on that. But the more I play, the more I realized like, as long as there's like a couple non-negotiables, right? Like, you know, keeping your spine angle pretty constant and keeping your arms in front of your body. And I think for a while, I was just kind of looking too much at the wrong thing when I was looking at like my swing from down the line. Sometimes I think I worry too much about like that transition looking super clean because I think it looks prettier. So I think for me, I concentrated a little bit too much on that. But I mean, if you kind of sit there and you look at your swing and you know you're keeping your spine angle pretty constant and you're keeping your hands in front of your body, like, I mean, the rest of it, you can kind of athletically figure out how to hit the ball reasonably straight. And I think the more I play on tour, the more I realize like, you don't have to hit it perfect. You just have to like keep it in play and just make a ton of putts. Like that's really all you have to do in golf. So I've been trying to get a little bit less tied up with like what the club head is doing and just work on those like non-negotiable things.
Sure, sure. As a coach and player as well, it's about getting the golf ball in the hole, and it's not always pretty. We're just seeing functional swings nowadays come up from the youth. It doesn't have to be, you know, back in our time, Tiff, it was like, got to be perfect at the top right here, you know? So now we got, you know, the Matt Wolves out there and all sorts of, you know, crazy moves. So when you say you were getting too far laid off, would you start to lose the ball left or?
Kind of both ways. I would kind of come out of my spine angle and the club would get behind me, and then I would either like flip it and try to save it, or I would just hit it like miles and miles right. And so I think, and it's interesting because my two best tournaments this year were like back to back, and like the only swing thought I had those 2 weeks was like, just hit little cuts, keep your hands in front of your body and just like hit smother cuts. And I didn't like hit it very far, but like, I mean, for me, if I can like keep it in the fairway, I can usually score pretty well because I feel like I'm a pretty decent putter. And I'm a pretty decent iron player. So for me, like if I can just keep it in play, like I can feel pretty good about my game that week. So in Thornberry and Toledo, those 2 weeks back to back, the entire time I was like, just hit some smothered cuts. And it's funny because the 18th hole at Thornberry, you actually kind of need a little bit of a draw, and like the rest of the holes are wide open there, so it doesn't matter what you do with the ball. But that's the only hole where like there's a bunker on the left, there's like hazard on the right, and it kind of doglegs over to the left. And I was like, should I try to hit a draw? And I was like, nah, just like skim that tree line and hit a cut back into the fairway. So yeah.
What makes you love Thornberry? I've seen you have a couple good, I mean, it's not on the schedule anymore, but you have a couple really great finishes there, and like the winning score is like 25, 30 under. Is it like, I've seen your stats, you're definitely a strong putter. Is it because you just get on the green and you can eye up and make anything or?
Yeah, I think the biggest part is that the fairways are super generous. So for me, like I would say driving the ball is probably my biggest weakness and putting is probably my biggest strength. And so for me, like Thornberry, I've never really gone there hitting the ball well, but I can keep it in play because the fairways are really generous and the greens are quite big as well. So it's kind of one of those situations where I'm like, all right, just get me on the green. Get me on the green anywhere within 30 feet and I can probably make it. So,
how do you feel about it not being on the schedule now then?
I'm super bummed and like, yeah, I'm like, man, you had to take that one away from me. But yeah, I'm not super happy about it. But yeah, you never know. We might bring it back one day.
Well, you're an awesome talent. And actually, since I've dove into you, you had like a pretty outstanding collegiate career, two top fives. You've had a bunch of top fives over your career. Like now you're in that like what we consider prime golf age. You know, how do you feel about that? And what are some goals that you have moving forward into essentially your prime, Tiff?
Yeah, I mean, so this is like my 10th year on tour. So I would say like, if you ask me how I feel, it would mostly be like tired. but yeah, I think for me, like my goal is always to like, not necessarily win, but to just put myself in contention more often. And last year was like kind of a good start to get that rolling. But for me, like, I don't really play on tour because I like want to win a bunch. It's because I just like love the thrill of competing. And I think to get that feeling, you just have to put yourself up there more. So that was kind of my biggest goals for this year before we kind of stopped playing for a while. So yeah, I would say that's my biggest goal this year. Yeah.
After UCLA, did you have a plan B if golf didn't work out for you?
Yeah, I think I like had planned on just going to grad school or something. Honestly, like I graduated in June and then I played the remainder of the Symmetry Tour season that year and like played awful. So at that point, before I went to Q school that off season, I was almost thinking like, should I start like doing applications now? And then I ended up just applying for Q school and then like getting some sort of status. So yeah, that was definitely an impetus in keeping me playing golf.
Well, a couple of victories on the Symmetra Tour give you some status on the LPGA. So that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, you're 10 years into your career, but you have 20 more to go. So if you're tired, you know, I mean, we see Laura Davies and Inkster out there still. So if you're tired now, you know, we're going to have to keep you going somehow. Red Bull and caffeine. But I guess my question is, when you look back on your career, you know, when it is at that stage of, you know, whenever it does end, like, how are you going to define success for yourself?
I think it'll just mostly be like the impact I made on other people. Like when fans and like other players come up and they say something like, oh my gosh, you're always happy. You're like always smiling. You've always made me feel better about my day. Like that brings me warm fuzzies, you know, like that makes me way more happier than if someone came up to me and said, oh my gosh, you're a great golfer. Like, I'm so impressed by this shot or that shot. For me, I like get so much more of like a, I just get more like feelings and like happy thoughts from when people come up and say that I made them feel better. So yeah, I would say that's probably more of like the type of impact that I want to make.
Well, you're one of five players on tour that's with Growing the Game for the girls golf, and that's got to be pretty proud to, you know, take the little kids. And I've seen you signing autographs and smiling all the time. Tell us a little bit about the girls golf, Growing the Game.
Yeah, so the LPGA USA Girls Golf Association has five like ambassadors, and I'm the Engage ambassador. So I guess I'm supposed to be like engaging with people. No, but I think it's actually great because like the girls that are starting to play and get really into golf right now, they're the ones that are going to be on tour in like 15, 20 years. And so I think the more you can reach out and, you know, make an impact on those girls, the like the cycle continues, right? When they're on tour, they're going to be able to impact that next generation. And from what I've heard, that's like one of the fastest growing demographics in golf right now are girls under the age of like 18, 19. So I think it's incredibly important to invest in that part of the game. And also for me, that's like totally my level right there. Like teenage girls, that's like my sense of humor. Like, and I think part of me, like, from high school, middle school, like still desperately wants to be liked by these girls. Like, I'll be in the froyo shop and these girls will be talking about something and I'll be like, yeah. They'll be like, all right, creepy lady.
No, you're a great ambassador for the game, and you do bring the attitude, and you bring engagement. You bring them into your circle. Keep it up.
And I think like the biggest like worry I have about younger golfers are that they might take it too seriously at a younger age. So the more that I can show them that like even at a professional level, you don't have to be that serious about it, I feel like the better off they'll be later in their career, because, you know, they won't get burnt out. They'll continue to grow in their love of the game. So yeah, for me, like I don't know how much of an impact I can make like actually helping them with their games or anything, but if I could help them with their attitude, like that's totally my wheelhouse.
90% mental and attitude out there, 10% technique. I think you being of service and helping out the young ladies is goes tenfold over anything else. So the girls golf is super, super fortunate to have you.
Or as I like to say, it's like 90% mental and attitude, 10% technique, and 10% math.
Hold on a second. Does anybody have a calculator on them?
Wait a minute.
What does that have to add up to? Well, Ron and I know this is contradictory because we're two males, but we love the women's game. We love being out there, and we hope we can shed some light on it as well with this podcast, and just bring any little bit of exposure helps, right? So that's great. Now, I guess, like, in the past 5 years since you've been on tour, what's a new belief, behavior, or habit that has most improved your life, Tiff?
Man, I would say just, like, mostly like kind of learning to develop your own intuition for what you need. Like, yeah, definitely there are some days where you need to like have that checklist of drills you need to do and you need to like work out and do all these things. But I mean, there are also some times where you need to like throw that list out the window and just like binge watch Ozarks for 3 days. Out of bed. And I think that's like really where my like treat yourself motto came, is from being able to like play an entire season and then for a month just leave the clubs and not touch them. And I think for me, that's been like the best way to kind of have some sort of moderation in a game that like doesn't really allow for a ton of moderation. Like if you're a professional athlete and you play golf for a living, like there it's almost like you have to like not like you can't be normal and be great at something, it seems like, right? But I think there is something to be said for being able to listen to your body and listen to yourself and like kind of develop a sense for what you need at that point in time. And sometimes it might be like you need to go to the gym and hit it hard, and sometimes it might be like, no, just like sit on the couch, wear a unicorn onesie and eat an entire sleeve of so like there's definitely a time and place for both. And I think that's been, I think for me, the key to being on tour for 10 years is being able to develop that moderation and know like intuitively what I need at any point in time.
What's maturity?
Yeah, it's getting old.
No, I mean like 100%. I think that's one of the things in Canada, you know, growing up, you know, grinding and looking for to be a professional golfer is like, we didn't have a choice, right? So like you're in San Diego, most tour players live in south of the border. They can golf 100 or 365 days a year. Well, up here, we literally hung the hooks up 6 months later, you know? So there was this like inherent like excitedness when the season would start back up and like you were like ready to grind, you know, but half a year's too much for anybody to ever go without anything, in my opinion. But I think seasons are really important. And now young people, especially with early specialization and like how hard it is to get on any professional sport, like there's no time to sit back and like there's so much peer pressure and social media. So you know, is that some advice that you'd give young people then, is to just like take time off, take a month off, you know, like how would if you were advising one of the girls to golf kids, like how would you go about giving that advice?
Yeah, I would say like the number one piece of advice I give any junior at a junior clinic is to play every sport you can, play every instrument you can, and just have like a variety of hobbies. Because I always say like, you can always iron out your swing and get better at things later in life, but just like just sheer athleticism that really can only be cultivated when you're super young. So I always say like, play every kind of sport, like don't specialize in one thing. Like, I think that's the worst thing you can do as a kid, is to take one thing and try to specialize in it. Cause not only are you kind of like stuck in that, whether you decide 10 years later, whether you really love it or not, but also like in terms of injury, like golf is such a repeated motion. It's so hard on your body. And the more you can balance it out with like a million other things, I feel like the better off you are, like physically, not just mentally.
Yeah, we talked about this in depth last week with Kelly Tan, just about being functional, a functional athlete, you know, multi-sport athlete as opposed to early specialization. So again, just repetition from another great player and awesome advice. And again, something else, can you talk to us? You know, I swear we don't have too many more questions here, but you put out a really awesome video maybe today or yesterday, and you're quite a guitar player. And that is just before you intervene here, you golf at a high level, you surf at a high level, which are already two extremely difficult sports, and you can play guitar and sing at a high level. Like, where does that come from?
So I actually started golf when I was around 12, which is pretty late for most of the girls on tour. But before that, I was like a total music nerd. So I played like classical piano since I was like 4 or 5 years old, and played violin and orchestra. I played saxophone in band. I played flute in marching band. And then I picked up the guitar in college. So
those Korean parents.
I know. You gotta have that piano and violin. But it's funny because when I was in maybe fourth grade, I actually went to this summer piano academy at Indiana University. And it was like a rigorous program. It was like college level. So you had like 2-hour lectures every day, and you had like meetings with professors and stuff, and you had to send an audition tape just to get accepted into the program. And there were only like 15 to 20 kids that got accepted. And at the time I was like 9 or 10 years old, but I remember I got there and there were these kids that were so talented, like kids from like Russia. There's one kid from Kentucky that had taught himself like improvisational jazz piano and like lived you know, 30 miles away from like his piano teacher and like commuted just to go see her and everything. And I realized there that I just had no future in music. So like I came back and pretty much quit piano that day. But yeah, like I would say music was my first love before golf or surfing. So I think music is just one of those things that I've always had an appreciation for growing up because it was such a big part of our family. And it's funny because there's no one in my family that I would say is like very athletic or into playing sports. I'm probably like the one outlier that like enjoys playing sports, but everyone in my family is really into music. So I would say that's probably where that came from.
Really, really good. I suggest everybody checks it out after they follow you when you give your handle at the end of this. But no, a great voice, great talent on the golf course, on the waves, on the guitar. So Tiff Joe, everybody, when you feel overwhelmed or under focused, what, like, other than surfing, is there something that kind of brings you back, you know, like resets you? Food, tacos, family, like what gets you when you're in that state? Back to Tiff Joe.
Well, I mean, definitely fish tacos. That's but yeah, I mean, for me, and you know, I listened to Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert.
Great podcast.
And he and Kristen Bell talk a lot about like whenever they're feeling like, you know, down or borderline depressed, they have like a list that they go back to. And if they do everything on the list and they still feel like crap about themselves, then that's when they need to talk to someone. And like, I also have a list, and one of them is obviously like surfing. One of them is like getting fish tacos with a friend. And then also like playing the guitar, playing the piano, like meditation. Like I have like a list of 5 or 6 things, and honestly, I've never gotten to the end of it without feeling better. Like, you know, for me, even like going outside, I think that's one of the things on my list, is just going outside and taking a 20-minute walk. Like that makes me feel better. So I think like, especially when you're playing any type of game at sport at a professional level, and like, you know, results almost kind of like ebb and flow, I feel like it's really important to have that kind of list, to have a list of things that you know are things that make you feel better. And, you know, and then you also understand that if you get to the end of it and you still are having issues, like you need to go talk to someone. So I've always been a big believer in kind of having that handy.
I've never heard this before. And that's, you know, I read a lot of these sorts of, you know, self-help books, for instance, but like, can you go into a little bit more detail of like, so is it a physical list? Do you encourage the listeners to actually like write that out, or young people to write that out, to put it somewhere, or a note in your iPhone? I mean, people don't write things out anymore, but like, how do you actually tangibly go about that?
Yeah, so I have like a physical list that I keep on my phone, and I'm a big fan of lists because I'm not organized. So like I have an app called Minimalist, and you have like, you can write down a list, and then you can also tap on it, and then it will put like a timer, like a 20-minute timer on it. And during those 20 minutes, every time you look at your phone, it'll be like, put down your phone. So it'll like kind of force you to like really put yourself within a task for 20 like very concentrated, focused minutes, which is what I really like about it. So I have a list for, you know, when I go out and practice during a tournament. So I'll have like cone drills, or I'll have like do this putting drill, lag putting drills or whatever. And I have the same thing for like, and it's like my happy to-do list. So if I'm not feeling great about life, I also have a list in that. There's like 4 or 5 lists at any given time in that app. And one of them is like things that just make me feel better. And it's like my happy list. And I think it's good to have, like, if it's not written down or like kept in your phone, like, I think it's good to have a concrete list, because I feel like when you get really emotionally caught up in something, like you're not going to think straight. So it's nice to have something concrete to look at.
Great advice.
So good. I wrote that down. I'll put it in the show notes, the Minimalist app. Love that. Anybody, kid, adult, everybody can, I'm going to do that. It's going to totally benefit the list of 5 things. So I swear we've only got a few more questions. I don't know how you're doing over there, Ronnie, but we're just kind of going through our list of these apparent self-help ones that I really love to finish with these, because you know, you women are, you've achieved such a high status with what you're doing, and you know, you're the best in the world at what you do. So any bit of light that we can shed on the listeners is such a great thing. So how has a failure or apparent failure set you up for later success? It doesn't have to be golf, it can be life. Please.
Honestly, like, if I look back in retrospect at like any failure in my life, it's never been 100% a bad thing. And like, I think there's a pretty famous quote where they're like, failure is never final, right? And like, I look back on like the 1 year that I lost my card and had to go to Q school, and like, I picked up surfing from that. And like, I look back and I can't imagine my life without surfing now. So I think back and like, if I had the choice and they said like, would you, you know, potentially lose your card if it meant you could have surfing in your life, I would say 100 times out of 100, I would take it. I would pick surfing over like having my card for the next year. So, and then also like, you know, when I first turned professional and I played the last half of the Symetra Tour season, I literally missed like 11 or 12 cuts in a row and like didn't even sniff them. And I look back at that and like I wouldn't give that up either. So I've never had a time, and maybe that's why I've been able to like keep a pretty good attitude playing such a hard game. But I think like I've never really looked at failure as failure, I guess, if that makes any sense.
No, it's a great answer. There's no right answer to that, right? I mean, it's just it's subjective, and still, again, just great advice. I've just got one more thing, and I'll let Ronnie grab it from there if he's got anything. And what would you, I mean, you're 10 years out there. What would you tell your, what advice would you give to your rookie self?
I would say to just like chill out. And I say this to like every rookie that I see on tour that's like playing every single E9 practice round and is like trying to play like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then like tee off on Thursday. It's like, just like chill out. There's only like so much you can do anyway. And like the season is super, super long. So, I mean, now like you couldn't like pay me enough money ever to go and play an E9, because like, I think if you look at it, it's not even super productive. You're playing, it's like 50 degrees out and it's like
no sleep.
Like not stretched out. And I would say like if I could go back, I would just tell myself to like chill out a lot.
Oh, that's really good advice. And for the listeners, an E9 is an early nine before pro-ams on Wednesday, which is only available, you know, if you're not in the pro-am, you're usually not in the top, you know, 50 to 80 players, and you got to be up early. You don't really get a warm up. You're kind of just going for it. So I play a few
with the first hole by like 6:30 a.m. It's like, yeah. So ridiculous. Yeah.
So it's like, you've seen the course, what kind of work are you really getting in? Like, and again, as a coaching background, it's just like, you would much more benefit from like crushing 10 hours of sleep that night, you know, and getting some good nutrition in.
Yeah. And now that they're like doing more research on, you know, health and wellness, they're finding like the best thing you can do is sleep. Like sleep is like the number one indicator of like how long you're gonna live, like just like how healthy you are in general, like more so than diet or exercise or anything. So I mean, if you can sleep, like sleep under that.
Sleep and social life. So Tiff Joe, I think you might live till be like 200 years old.
Just be out there on tour.
Longevity is key, but that's priceless, man. I'm tapped out here. Ronnie, do you have anything else for Tiff?
Well, I'm just sitting back enjoying it. A big fan of yours, Tiff. You got the greatest attitude and you're so humble. I've seen you walk the nose on your board. You're a professional golfer at elite levels and you take it as no big deal, but you're teaching the young girls out there, you know, to have fun out there and don't grind. You're not a grinder. I love the fact that you just go out there and hit the ball. You're a breath of fresh air. You really, truly are. And it's the Ladies Professional Golf Tour. It's good to have you as an ambassador for the young kids. And we really thank you, Casey and I both. Thank you for coming on our podcast. We're starting out just like you, but we enjoy having guests like you that just keep it real. So thanks again for coming on with us.
Sweet. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
TIFF Joe does keep it real, and thank you, Exact. Ronnie, I can't say it any better than that. Thanks for saying yes. And is there anything that you would like to give a shout out to, or your social media tags? Where can the listeners find you? Anything that you want to touch on at all?
Well, I guess my Instagram handle is at TIFF Joe, and then Jane Parks and my fledgling webcast is Two Girls, One Putt with the numbers, and that's going to be on Instagram. And then I'm just like uploading some of the webcasts on my YouTube channel, which is Cup of J-O-H, Cup of Joe. Like
You're
the
awesome.
One last thing, the name of your podcast, Two Girls, One Putt, that's very clever. Where'd you guys come up with that?
Oh, I did. Jane and I have been having a lot of like very pointless FaceTime sessions that we say are like board meetings, but really like, I mean, sometimes we just sit there and eat cereal for 30 minutes and don't say a word to each other, but we're on FaceTime. And so we were just kind of sitting there brainstorming ideas, and she had thrown a couple out, and I was like, how about like Two Girls, One Putt? And she was like, yeah, that's fine. that's all we accomplished in that FaceTime meeting.
I look forward to following that. I can't wait to get on tour. You got to get some of the caddies in there. You can roast those guys over the coals. Thanks again.
Sweet. Easy Thanks. Roasting. I'll link all that in the show notes, all of her handles. And thanks again. Thanks again, Tiff. Thanks, everybody, for listening to this week's show of the Let's Talk Divots podcast. If you enjoyed anything specific from this show, go ahead, send us a message. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms. Give us a shout out, whatever, drop us a line, just say hello, recommend some guests you'd like us to try to track down, and we will do our best to work on it. Awesome. Hope everybody has a great week. Stay safe out there.